to keep us in joint discussions and a roundtable dialogue on development aid attend the second ASEAN United Nations Summit and a meeting of the heads of state of the French-speaking communities member countries. Representatives from the Vietnamese government and the EU have gathered in Hanoi to contribute ideas to a master project and program of action on the development of relations between Vietnam and the EU. Speaking at Wednesday conference, Deputy Prime Minister Vũ Khoan pointed out three main reasons for Vietnam to choose the EU as its partner in the master project. First, the EU is playing an important role in the world. Second, the EU has constantly supported Vietnam's renewal and integration process. And third, the EU is one of Vietnam's most important partners. Mr. Vũ Khoan.
Tinh thần chủ yếu của cái văn kiện này là lần đầu tiên chúng tôi đề ra một
cái. This is the first time Vietnam has worked out a master cooperative project, which covers all aspects of social life, with political cooperation serving as a premise, economic and trade relations as a material base, and cultural relations as a spiritual foundation of the cooperation between Vietnam and the EU. The project will be devised in line with Vietnam's 5-year socio-economic development plan through 2010 and the country's future of WTO membership.
UK Ambassador to UN Robert Gordon said,
Vietnam has paid us, the European Union, the compliment of being the first international partner with which you wish to develop a longer-term strategic vision, a vision set out in this master plan. The European Union and its member states cherish their growing closeness to Vietnam. For some of us, these relations are fairly new, and for others, they go back a long way. At its enlargement last year, the EU family took in a number of countries with a long tradition of friendship with Vietnam, and they've helped enrich our collective understanding of this country. Your accession to ASEAN has opened the door to greater EU-ASEAN closeness. So I can say straight away that we, the EU member states, warmly applaud the thinking behind the Vietnam-EU master plan. And we're really grateful that you have chosen to start this new experiment with us. We will work with you to make it a success. And at this stage of the process, we recommend you use us, the EU heads of mission in Hanoi, as your principal interlocutors to flesh out the master plan structure.
The Vietnamese Ministry of Foreign Affairs on Wednesday confirmed that 4 Vietnamese sailmen were kidnapped in Somalia while working on Taiwanese fishing vessels. These men were sent to work on Taiwanese fishing vessels by 2 companies under the Ministry of Transport. According to the latest information, all of the kidnapped fishermen are okay. A spokesperson for the Vietnamese Foreign Ministry said that the Vietnamese government is very concerned about the incident and has asked relevant agencies to work with the Taiwanese to take all necessary measures to ensure the safety of the fishermen working on the Taiwanese boat. The French Development Agency will loan Vietnam 40 million euros to restore the 100-year-old Long Bien Bridge in Hanoi, the first bridge ever to span the Red River. The project's management board says that the bridge will be restored to its original design. The project is expected to cost about 80 million euros. Construction of the 2.3-kilometer Long Bien Bridge began in 1898 and it was in service in 1902.
You are listening to Radio Voice Vietnam in Harrison Ward News. The fourth round of 6-day talks on the Korean Peninsula issues is likely to come from Bonn has come out. The backer for the JEF is Nitmir Wadabas. JEF Wadabas is eerder van de Amerikaanse stad. En zij is er kapot van dat de stad verwoest is.
Alles is onder water, de huizen zijn kapot. Ja, Durban Street en al die straten waar dan die muziek gemaakt werd, dat is dan eigenlijk allemaal vernield. Dus ja, ik weet niet hoe ze dat verder nog moeten doen. Het lijkt me
vreemd. In een bid to summon their strategic partnership. Following the meeting, China and the EU signed agreements in many fields, including transportation, environmental protection, and space development, and issued joint statements about the summit. Prior to the summit, EU and China trade officials signed an agreement to release 75 million Chinese textile products, which exceeded the EU's country's quotas. British Prime Minister Tony Blair touched down in New Delhi late Tuesday to attend the India-EU summit, which began today. The conference aims to boost strategic relations between the two sides. After bilateral meetings between British and Indian leaders, EU officials expect to meet their Indian counterparts to discuss economic and trade cooperation. They will then issue the joint statement on the future bilateral development direction. The Republic of Korea is considering the withdrawal of 1,000 of its 3,200 soldiers stationed in Iraq. The soldiers to be withdrawn are mainly fighters, while engineers and rescue workers will remain in the country. 3,600 Korean soldiers were dispatched to Erbil, the capital city of the Kurdish Autonomous Region, last August at the U.S. request, and 400 of them have returned to Korea over the past year. Korea troops currently in Iraq are short in number after the U.S. and Britain. Earlier this year, the Korean parliament approved the expansion of the mandate of Korean troops in Iraq until the end of the year. More than 90 countries are offering aid for victims of Hurricanes Katrina in 3,000 U.S. states. 23 EU countries and ASEAN countries, including Japan, the Republic of Korea, China and India, have pledged to provide the victims with financial aid as well as rescue workers. Mexico is sending medical workers, food, medicines and drinking water to the affected areas. Currently, Canadian and Singaporean helicopters are searching for the missing and distributing relief aid to the people. That's the news from the Voice of Vietnam.
In Siberia, and we'll be connected to Nakada, Russia's Pacific Coast port. You're listening to CRI News. Top Chinese legislator Wu Guangguo has called for stronger multilateral cooperation in the spirit of mutual respect, mutual trust, and common development. Wu Guangguo made this appeal in a speech delivered at the Second World Conference of Speakers of Parliament at the headquarters of the United Nations. He says mutual respect is a prerequisite for multilateral cooperation. Countries big or small, strong or weak, rich or poor, are all equal members of the international community and thus all deserve respect in the world. China's Vice Premier Jiang Tianyan has told a business symposium the only growth rate of China's gross domestic product is expected to hit 9% this year. The Vice Premier said China's microeconomic control has proved effective and the country will try to maintain the stability and continuity of its policies. the United States Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, says the definition of the Millennium Development Goals is acceptable. Bolton said on Tuesday that the U.S. would accept the definition if a proper range of the goals could be set. The Bush administration has granted a visa to Iran's new president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, to attend the opening of the Iran General Assembly next week. Whether Ahmadinejad was involved in the 1979 seizure of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran. The student-led takeover was noted in the 52 U.S. hostages for 444 days. On the same day, State Department spokesman Shahrukh Komak says the grant of visa to the Iranian president does not signal a change of U.S. policy towards Tehran. Earlier, Iranian Madrid speaker Golan Ali Haddad Adel has canceled a visit to the United States for the UN session due to a deeper delay. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan has said that he accepted an independent inquiry panel's criticism of him over the management of the UN in Iraq, that he will not resign even if he was accused of management lacking an oil for food program. The 21st Century Forum was its theme, Sustainable Development, China and the World, called Wednesday in Beijing. News.
Now four down. Then God ought to be quick enough.
No, the
difference is such a long trip, you get it armed up before you
this.
Welcome back to News and Reports on CRI. I'm Jennifer Hayden in Beijing. China has sent 100 tons of tents, bedding and generators to the United States to help victims of Hurricane Katrina. The items were 15 million yuan, or almost $2 million, left Beijing International Airport late on Wednesday, heading for Little Rock, Arkansas. Wang Hanzhou, with the Foreign Aid Department of the Commerce Ministry, says the Chinese government wants to show goodwill towards those affected by Katrina.
These are things they need in the disaster area. Tents, tents, clothing, bedding and small gas generators. We think they will be urgently needed in the crisis areas.
Katrina hit the Gulf Coast last week, displacing hundreds of thousands of residents. The death toll has reached 294, although officials say they expect the number to rise to 1,000. China said last week that it has offered $5 million in aid. In New Orleans, meanwhile, U.S. police and National Guard troops are dealing with multiple pressures as they are trying to coax stubborn holdouts from their homes while arresting snipers shooting at those trying to restore order. With 60% of New Orleans still underwater, an estimated 10,000 residents remain holed up in the ruined city. New Orleans Police Chief Eddie Compass says mandatory evacuations will be carried out against those who refuse to leave.
There are thousands of people who want to voluntarily evacuate at this time. Once all the voluntary evacuations have taken place, then we will concentrate our efforts and our forces to mandatorily evacuate.
New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin is warning that the dirty water could spread disease and that natural gas is leaking all over town. Workers are now struggling to find and count the corpses decaying in the 90-degree heat. The mayor has estimated New Orleans death toll could reach 10,000. Meanwhile, President Bush is asking lawmakers to approve another $51 billion to cut the cost of federal repairs. Congressional officials say the air blasting is out.
China's top legislature is willing to work with parliaments from different countries to conduct a wide range of cooperation to push forward peace and development.
He also urged member countries of the Union to continuously raise the level of exchanges among the parliaments and utilise the Congress to strengthen coordination. The world's top judicial officials are meeting at a conference in Shanghai. With a focus on improving global legal strategies across the spectrum, leading lawmakers are aiming for cover. In light of China's repeated efforts to show an appeal against the deportation of China's most wanted criminal, Lai Chung-shing, I spoke with Canada's Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Beverly McLaughlin. She says the Sino-Canadian relations are
we're just at the beginning of a five-year program where we're working together on educational projects for Chinese teachers, and we're very enthusiastic about it. We think that it's going to inaugurate a new phase of our relationships. We've had previous programs, and they've been very successful, and we're hoping that this one will take our collaboration step through.
Do you also find the setting of China and similar countries adopted by Eastern countries?
Well, I think there's obviously a cross-fertilization, and we all learn from each other. Example, comparison of our jury system, for example, through looking at community justice in areas of China, and dispute resolution through different means and so on. It's very, very useful for all of us to broaden our perspectives and look at our problems through new lenses.
The current conference that you're attending in Shanghai at the moment, how do you see that progressing future relations?
Well, I think the conference is important because it brings together people in China and in Canada and in many other countries who are concerned about common issues, the rule of law explicitly, medical education, human rights, intellectual property, a host of other matters, legal matters, and more global matters. And it's necessary to have meetings like this so that we can exchange views and discuss our own problems in the broader perspective of the world.
And do you find when you're discussing a lot of different issues of ensuring
fishes that also occupy the planet, the Australian expert is urging the international community to help impoverished countries deal with resource issues.
We also have to do it in a way that improves global equity, because helping the poorest is not just our humanitarian duty, it is also our self-interest, because a world of increasing inequality will be a world of increasing tension and increasing insecurity.
Ian Lowe stresses that the use of natural resources has to be based on a better understanding of the limits of natural systems. Inequality and market allocations are within sustainable limits. CRI News.
The UN Security Council and Secretary General Kofi Annan are being criticized for allowing corruption and rape in Iraq's oil pursuit program. The Independent Inquiry Committee has issued a definitive report. It says those managing the program followed the ideas of the United Nations and that corruption and waste flourished after the oil pursuit program was created in 1996. Former U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Paul Volcker is the chairman of the investigation.
Our assignment has been directed to the maladministration in the oil pursuit program and for evidence of corruption within the U.N. organization and by contractors. Unhappily, we found both.
one of the largest humanitarian programs in history. Oil for Food was a lifeline for 90% of the country's population of 26 million. The report by the Independent Inquiry Committee is highly critical of the lack of oversight of the program by the Secretary General
Louise
Fisher, and I'm accepting the criticism in a
briefing
to the Council.
The finding in today's report must be deeply embarrassing to all of us. The Inquiry Committee has stripped away the curtain and shown a harsh light into the most unsightly corners of our conversation.
After the most damaging allegations against the woman here, the committee reaffirmed that there wasn't sufficient evidence to show he knew about the misconduct in the program. Neither was there any evidence to show he interfered in the contract in the program. Well, this is a news report from CRI. If you want to find out more about these or any other stories you hear on news reports, you can log on to our website, www.crienglish.com. We'll find the latest news, comments, discussions, and much more about China, Asia, and the world. And we'd like to hear from you if you're going to be talking about the program. You can contact us by writing to our email address, crieng.com.ca. Coming up next, a sound for a pause in Egypt. Stay tuned. In this week's Life in China, we will first find out why more and more people in the world are interested in learning Chinese. Then we will travel to Tibet Ottoman region in the country's southwest to see how lamas work and live in their monasteries. And finally, we head to a vineyard on the outskirts of Beijing to see why pisco grapes has become popular among city dwellers. For this and more, join us for Life in China this Friday. Welcome back. Polls have closed in Egypt's presidential election. 77-year-old incumbent Hosni Mubarak is expected to easily win a fifth six-year term, though he is facing nine opponents. Here's what the current
president had to say. There's no one better than him.
He's our president who has served us and helped us to succeed. He made us cross the canal. I can't say enough good things about him.
I'm for the president. I'm a member of the National Democratic Party.
Mubarak cast his ballot at a school in a Cairo suburb, close to the presidential palace, accompanied by his wife and his son. However, there are two strong liberal contenders. Ayman Nur of the Jihad Party and Norman Gamar of Azad Mid. The leading opposition candidate, Ayman Nur, says the elections are not fair at all and has vowed to reject rigged results. Mubarak and his National Democratic Party have held a tight grip on power in Egypt for 24 years. Final results of the election are not expected until Saturday. In recent years, more and more foreigners have come to the University of Tibet to learn the ethnic language. They are from the U.S. and increasingly from other countries of Europe, Africa, and Oceania. Here, our reporter Jo Yong has been to Tibet to find out more. Kutum Kering is a 38-year-old Tibetologist who was born in Tibet. 4 years ago, Kutum came to the University of Tibet and began to teach the Tibetan language. Many foreigners, as well as Chinese students, have been come to learn the language from him. From Finland is one of the 21 students who attended Putin Sarun's international summer course. She said though she had studied Tibetan language for almost 2 years in the University of Helsinki, it is still quite necessary to come to Tibet, where there is a fruitful environment for language learning. The main reason of coming here was to speak Tibetan properly. I'm interested in Tibetan culture and Buddhism, and I am in the process of becoming a Tibetologist. Katerina has quite good knowledge of practical Tibetan studies. What she lacks is the ability to speak Tibetan. Which one requires these students to speak Tibetan only in class. She also has them watch many movies and talk shows. She teaches Tibetan culture. She uses the classic Tibetan fiction, the songs and the
biography of the university. It's a way of analyzing Tibetan classical text and try to know some classical vocabulary.
Zorella Govic is from Yugoslavia. He is researching a doctorate in Tibetan studies in the U.S.
she says he has drawn interest for Tibetan culture and religion ever since he was a little boy.
You're exposed to so many different sources of language. You know, we are exposed to radio, we are exposed to TV drama, we are exposed to newspaper, we are exposed a little bit to classical, we are exposed to contemporary, you know, we are exposed to grammar.
In recent years, more and more foreigners have embarked on long-term and short-term courses, being attracted by the Tibetan culture, religion, and its magnificent landscape. Most of them are from the U.S. The number of those from other countries, South Africa, and Switzerland is also increasing. Zhou Yun, CRI News.
Have you ever wanted to travel to China? Well, here's a good and free opportunity for you. CRI is launching a quiz on Taiwan Island. Get the right answers, and the lucky top winner will enjoy a free visit to China next spring. So join us here for CRI's Taiwan Quiz from Tuesday to Friday. Also take part online. Just log on to
www.crienglish.com. Welcome back. Now for some of the stories making China's bony paper. All coal mines in China's Guangdong province are being shut down. The decision from the local government follows the devastating flooding accident that killed 123 miners in the southern province last month. The China News Daily reports that inspections of all coal mines in the province and are low output and have high rates of pollution. China has had a series of major coal mine accidents this year, resulting in the death of hundreds of miners. China will launch its second manned spacecraft within 2 months. The Shanghai Morning Post says the launch of the Shenzhou 6 mission will carry 2 men into orbit for 5 or 6 days. No word on yet who the astronauts will be. China sent up its first manned spacecraft, Shenzhou 5, in October 2003, making China the third country after the United States and Russia to put a man into space. Recapping the top stories, China is sending nearly $2 million worth of aid to the United States to help victims of Hurricane Katrina. Chief Justice of the Canadian Supreme Court joined CRI on judiciary cooperation between the two countries. The United Nations is criticized for corruption and waste in the oil for food program, and polls have closed in Egypt's first multi-candidate presidential election. And the rest of the CRI News team. I'm Jennifer Ian in Beijing. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned now for a special feed on Taiwan. Thank you for coming with us here on CRI.
Quiz here on CRI. Today we have the third report of our four-part series. As usual, you'll hear 2 questions after the report. If you answer all the questions correctly, you'll be eligible for a draw that can win you a free trip to China. Trade between the Chinese mainland and Taiwan Island had been intermittent until 1979, when the mainland first proposed direct trade lines, air, mail, and shipping services across the strait. With an abundant low-cost liquid fuel, the Chinese mainland naturally began to attract investment from Taiwanese enterprises. Lin Yawang, a Taiwanese businessman, first came to the mainland to do research, but began his business with the mainland right away.
The first time I stepped on to the mainland was in 1989.
I was in the forecastle, but I did so well.
I received orders in Taiwan,
and then exported them to the U.S. Changes. The mainland issued Taiwanese business people investment rules and a series of regulations and measures. With the encouragement of these policies and measures, and the vigor shown in the development of the mainland, more and more businesses are Englishmen from Taiwan began cooperation with the mainland in various forms. Chen Guangguan, a researcher from the Institute of Taiwan Research in the Chinese Academy of Sciences, has more.
The machinery and petroleum industry have followed those labor-intensive enterprises to invest in the mainland. Some high-tech industries in Taiwan also made large-scale investments. This soon replaced its traditional industry and became a major force on the Chinese mainland.
By the end of this May, the total value of trade between Taiwan and the Chinese mainland has totaled over $430 billion. Currently, the Chinese mainland has become the largest. The major origin of a trade surplus outside of Taiwan Island itself. However, the Taiwanese Administrative Department has always tried to prevent the successful implementation of direct trade links and shipping services across the strait. Chen Guoyu, a Taiwanese entrepreneur, has run businesses across the strait for years. If the crew on the rail line, labor force, and consumers, and the safety factor will be increased, there will only be benefits and no harm. That the Taiwanese authorities would stop swimming against the tide and not delay the implementation of the direct link for political reasons. After years, the central government has been sparing no effort to promote the cross-strait exchange. In order to solve farmers' difficulties in Taiwan, for example, it took measures to improve the sales of their farm products in the mainland. The first half of this year, Taiwanese fruit sold in the mainland increased by over 40% compared to the same period last year. The Chinese mainland began to put another measure into practice. No tax would be charged on 15 fruits from Taiwan. It was predicted that the sales volume for those fruits would continue to increase. Now it's question time. Currently, where is the largest market and the major source of the balance of trade surplus outside Taiwan Island itself? Number two, what does the term three direct links refer to? We will be picking winners for the first, second, and third prize. The winners of the special award will win an opportunity for a one-week trip to China next spring. When we come to the end of the quiz series, you can write us all your answers to the English service, China Radio International, Beijing, China. Postal code is 100040. You can also email us at crimm@crimm.com. You can also take more questions online. Just log on to www.crimm.com. We're looking forward to your replies. Join us at the same time tomorrow for the fourth and final installment of CRI's Taiwan Quiz.
Hello and welcome to Voices from Other Lands on China Radio International. I'm Jenny Levin. Hidden away in a hoop following near Beijing. There's a world of activity that few even notice. Here, people otherwise often unsettled and unnoticed in society are given contact with a community that they really matter. Welcome to Weiwei, a DCA center dedicated to providing care, confidence, and quality of life to people with mental health disabilities in Beijing. Six separate branches on the capital, as well as outreach centers up and down the country. Including the themselves, each person learns skills essential to their communities, such as cooking and cleaning, raising funds for healing, making and musical concerts, and generally being given a chance to shine in a caring, supportive environment. I met Claire Nelson, an American girl here at the center, to get the lowdown.